It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from here in sunny Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 61 degrees. We're looking for mostly sunny skies today. Northwest wind could gust as high as 25. Partly cloudy overnight, a low of 50. West wind gusting again to 20. Mostly sunny for Saturday, a high near 61. Northwest wind still gusting up to 25. So we're looking at some gusty northwest winds between 20 and 25 for today and tomorrow. Sunday also calling for mostly sunny skies, high near 61. West winds down to 15. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Coast Guard helicopter air crew medevacs a patient 140 miles south of Dutch Harbor. We get some numbers in from the statewide census. Andrew Kitchenman has that story. And the governor will not appeal the decision to keep the money in the PCE fund. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The vast majority of service members being sent to Afghanistan will be there by the end of the weekend. The Pentagon spokesman, retired Rear Admiral John Kirby, gave an update a short time ago on the mission that he says will be narrowly focused on evacuations. NPR's Greg Myrie has more on the scramble to get Americans and their allies to safety before the U.S. mission ends in just over 2 weeks.
These 3,000 troops are supposed to start arriving in Kabul today or tomorrow, and they'll be based at the Kabul airport. Their mission will be to provide security for U.S. diplomats at the embassy and help them fly out of the country. And a second part of the mission will be to help with the evacuation of Afghan interpreters who've worked with the U.S. military and are applying for visas to come to the U.S.
NPR's Greg Myrie. The Taliban have captured more territory, including Kandahar, the country's second largest city. Their advances this week put insurgents closer to taking the capital, Kabul. Pentagon officials say they're concerned with how quickly so much of Afghanistan's fallen to the Taliban. The regime was toppled in the U.S. Allied offensive following the 9/11 terrorist attacks nearly 20 years ago. Some centrist House Democrats are warning Speaker Nancy Pelosi they won't vote for a critical budget resolution unless the House first approves an infrastructure bill. NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports.
Speaker Pelosi is focused on a two-track effort to pass both the $1 trillion-plus infrastructure bill and a $3.5 trillion package that includes new spending on child care, family leave, and climate initiatives. The Democratic leader has repeatedly said she'll wait to bring up a vote on the bipartisan infrastructure bill until the Senate approves the larger social policy package. But in a letter to Pelosi, nine moderate members argue passing the infrastructure bill can't wait. Progressive members worry their moderate colleagues will pull support for the larger spending package if the infrastructure bill is already signed. Because Democrats control the House by a very narrow margin, Pelosi can only afford to lose three Democratic votes. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News.
Parts of Florida are under a local state of emergency as a precaution ahead of tropical depression this weekend. As member station WLRN's Alyssa Ramos reports, local authorities say they're ready.
The National Weather Service says Fred could strengthen into a tropical storm before approaching South Florida. Right now, a tropical storm warning is in effect for the Florida Keys. Meteorologists expect heavy rainfall of up to 3 to 6 inches, along with potential flood risks. The Keys will most likely feel the impacts tomorrow morning. No evacuations or airport closures are planned at this time. The Florida Park Service has shut down overnight accommodations for its state parks. They include Curry Hammock, John Pennekamp, Longkey, and Bahia Honda Parks. For NPR News, I'm Melissa Ramos in Miami.
You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Coast Guard helicopter aircrew from Air Station Kodiak medevaced a mariner from the bulk carrier Restiga near Cold Bay yesterday. At around 1 p.m., the Coast Guard received a call from the Alaska Maritime Agency in Dutch Harbor. They reported that an individual was suffering from a possible stroke while the vessel was 140 nautical miles south of Dutch Harbor. A C-130 aircraft launched from Kodiak to respond, as did the helicopter crew an hour later. The aircrew transported a 42-year-old male to Dutch Harbor, where they conducted a wing-to-wing transfer with a life med crew who transported him to Anchorage for further care. Alaska's racial and ethnic diversity increased over the last 10 years, according to U.S. Census numbers released yesterday. Along with giving a snapshot of Alaska's demographics, the population data will play an important role in state politics. It will be used to draw the district lines for the Alaska's legislature. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman has this report.
The share of Alaska's population that identifies as a race or ethnicity other than solely white rose from less than a third of the population to more than 40%. That includes increases in the Hispanic, Black, Asian, and Native Hawaiian and other Pacific Islander populations. The share of the population that identifies as Alaska Native and American Indian alone fell slightly, but the share that identifies as Alaska Native and American Indian in combination with one or more other races grew to almost 22%. Jackie Boyer, whose name in Chupik is Aka Najyak, says the census has made changes over time to be more inclusive of Alaska Natives. That includes providing a space to write out their tribal affiliation.
Not just identifying as American Indian or Alaska Native, but printing your enrolled tribe is a huge thing for like identity and kind of encompassing, like, you know, this is who I am, what I am.
Boyer is the campaign and policy director at the advocacy organization Native Peoples Action. She'll be keeping track of how all of the census numbers translate into legislative district lines.
We just want to make sure that people who are impacted are involved in the process and, you know what's going on. And, you know, my auntie in Nunavak needs to have her voice heard in the process and feel like she's included.
The share of the population that identifies as white alone fell to less than 60% from nearly 70%.
This drop in the white population was very surprising to myself anyway. It definitely caught me off guard.
That's David Howell. He's the state's demographer, which means he works on population estimates between each census. He says the rise in other races and ethnicities is consistent with the long-term trend of Alaska becoming more diverse. And he has a theory on why the white population dropped.
Alaska has this large baby boomer population that is pretty overwhelmingly white, who moved here and has been steadily moving out as they retire. And generally older people tend to identify more as like a race alone, whereas younger people identify as a race alone or in combination more often than older people.
The census results were delayed by the COVID-19 pandemic. That means the redistricting board will be drawing state legislative district maps later than normal. The board had been expecting to receive the official numbers on September 30th, which would start a 30-day clock under the state constitution, in which it must produce one or more draft district maps. It's not yet clear what the release of data on Thursday will mean for that timeline. But Redistricting Board Vice Chair Nicole Borromeo says the board is ready to get to work. The map 10 years ago had to be redrawn twice due to legal challenges. Borromeo wants the new map to last a decade, and she encourages members of the public to be engaged with redistricting.
That's the goal. We're hoping that the public is also engaged in the process on an organizational, individual level, and that they will be drawing their own maps with software out there as well to help guide the process.
Borromeo also is the executive vice president and general counsel for the Alaska Federation of Natives. She notes that the census count of the Alaska Native and American Indian population in Alaska increased along with a national increase. She says that's likely because much of this population was missed in the last census.
I'm not surprised that the number has increased, and I would attribute that to the educational campaigns that went into full deploy to make sure that the undercount that happened last time around in Indian country didn't happen this time around.
The Matanuska Susitna borough led the state in population growth, with more than 18,000 more residents than last census. This may mean that one more House district will be located entirely in the borough. The heavily Republican borough currently has four entire districts and most of two others. Parts of rural Alaska also had significant growth, including the North Slope borough and Kusilvak census area. But Anchorage lost more than 500 residents. It may have at least one fewer district located entirely in the municipality. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has reported 14 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough today. One case was a close contact of a previously reported case, and 13 cases are of unknown transmission, pending contact tracing. 143 cases are currently classified as active locally. There is one hospitalization locally. And the emergency room remains busy with patients seeking COVID-19 related care. Residents are encouraged to stay home if they feel ill. Close contacts should wear a mask and socially distance. Also, before attending social gatherings, residents are encouraged to carefully consider the number of people attending and the ability to gather outside while socially distancing. A shipwreck from nearly 40 years ago has begun leaking diesel fuel off Kodiak Island. State officials say last month's massive earthquake apparently disturbed the wreck's resting place at the bottom of Woman's Bay. Jade Gamble, the state's on-scene coordinator in Kodiak, said on Friday that it's not clear how much diesel and other contaminants were on the St. Patrick, a 138-foot former scallop boat.
It started leaking after the earthquake. We've been responding along with the Coast Guard, and right now we are collecting information on that vessel, and they've been able to minimize the leak. But right now we're going at it. Now that it's minimized, our main goal is to ensure we don't have some type of catastrophic release.
The St. Patrick was hit by a rogue wave during a stormy November night in 1981. The captain ordered the crew to abandon ship. Only two of its 12 members survived. At Juneau's Mendenhall Glacier, it's retreating, and that opens up new land. And that federal land is open to potential mining claims. As Claire Strempel reports for KTOO, the Forest Service is stepping in to stop that.
The Mendenhall Glacier is one of the most visited sites in Alaska, so the Forest Service is making moves to keep the area pristine for tourism and recreation. James King is the Regional Director of Recreation, Land, and Minerals for the Forest Service.
What we're hearing and seeing from the public is this is an extremely valuable place to recreate, and the viewshed is very important, and so we're working hard to protect that.
The viewshed King referenced is the view from the Mendenhall Visitor Center, where roughly 500,000 people a year gaze out at the blue ice. 70 years ago, the Forest Service took the land around the Mendenhall Glacier off of the table for mining. Now there's a strip of land exposed by the shrinking glacier. King says his agency's request is simply extending that decades-old prohibition to the new land, keeping up with the changing landscape. But it's not just procedural. There are actually mining interests that make claims below receding glaciers. A Canadian prospecting company did just that on the land exposed by the retreat of the nearby Herbert Glacier a few years ago. But King says he isn't aware of a lot of that going on. Since the acreage in question is public land, this isn't going to happen overnight.
The withdrawal process is a lengthy process, and we hope to get through the environmental piece of that by the end of this year.
This is the beginning of the environmental review, and the first public comment period of the process is open now through September 7th. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel for KTOO.
Governor Mike Dunleavy announced yesterday that his administration will not appeal a ruling earlier this week that the state must maintain a more than $1 billion endowment that helps lower electricity costs in high-cost areas. Dunleavy said in a statement that the ruling provided clarity and that the Power Cost Equalization Program provides an essential service. His administration previously took the position that the money in the Power Cost Equalization Endowment Fund could only stay there if three-quarters of both legislative chambers voted in favor of that. Since that failed to happen this year, the administration planned to sweep the money out of the fund and into the Constitutional Budget Reserve. The Alaska Federation of Natives and others sued Dunleavy to stop that from happening, and Superior Court Judge Josie Garten ruled in favor of the plaintiffs. Dunleavy said the court did not address an important political challenge that, quote, at any point, the PCE fund can be raided by the legislature with a simple majority vote, end quote. Dunleavy has proposed requiring funding for the program as part of an amendment to the state constitution that would also enshrine permanent fund dividends. Dunleavy said the possibility that the PCE could be raided in the future is a reason why the legislature should pass his proposed amendment this year. Silver alerts are meant to help communities locate vulnerable adults when they go missing. But after an elderly woman went missing in Juneau earlier this year, family members say the system is flawed and not enough people know how it works. KTOO's Lindsay Brolini has more on the alert system and why some say it needs to be changed.
On May 16th, Geraldine Nelson went missing in Juneau. And for several days, dozens of volunteers went out looking for her. They posted on social media, put up signs around town, and organized with local law enforcement. One of the volunteers, Barbara Cadiente Nelson, asked the troopers for more.
You know, despite the communication and despite the effort, there are still people who are unaware that we have an elder that's missing. And I have never received a silver alert, and the people I've spoken to have not either.
She wanted a silver alert. That's a program that's meant to help communities locate vulnerable adults. And it turns out there was a silver alert issued for Geraldine Nelson, but a lot of people said they didn't get it. Preston Nelson, Jerry's grandson, is one of them. He said he was able to get word out during the search through the Facebook group Juneau Community Collective. And though the group has more than 18,000 members, not everybody in Juneau is a part of it. Nelson asked the Facebook group if they got a silver alert for his grandmother, and nearly 100 people responded. Most said no, and there was a lot of confusion about how you get them in the first place. Nelson is now asking,
basically, how does the system work? How should it work? Why didn't it work when they sent in an activation?
A quick note, this is going to get complicated, but here's what you should know. A lot of people seem to think that silver alerts are sent to your phone. But it turns out that's a completely different system, and it works differently depending on where you are in the state. Tom Matisse, Juneau's emergency program manager, was in Anchorage before, and he got silver alerts sent to his phone. He thought that would happen in Juneau too, and when it didn't, he wanted to find out why. So he went to the Alaska State Troopers. They manage the silver alert system. And it turns out there was some confusion there, too. First, troopers said they should have activated a wireless emergency alert for Geraldine Nelson, because that's what they do for all silver alerts. Then about a week later, they said they don't automatically do that for silver alerts. Matisse says that he wants to look more into whether silver alerts work as intended.
And then we have the ability to forward that up to the state's Emergency Communications Committee and request that this be potentially reviewed, revised, or changed.
He says that triggering the Wireless Emergency Alert System, or WEA, and sending a message to everyone's cell phones for every silver alert may not be the answer, but he thinks having the option is important. Troopers say a silver alert is not a phone notification, at least not in Alaska. Some other states, including Arizona and Wisconsin, have the ability to send phone notifications for silver alerts. But here, those phone notifications only go out in very specific situations, like when there's severe weather, unless you live in Anchorage. Troopers say Anchorage police handle their own silver alerts and can choose how to broadcast them. Juneau police, however, need to go through the troopers to issue one. So, if it isn't going to your phone, how would you get the silver alert? Turns out it could come from social media, the silver alert email list, and TV and radio broadcasts. But those TV and radio broadcasts aren't mandatory, and it's not even clear whether those emails automatically go to local media organizations. According to the state's Silver Alert plan, they're supposed to have an email list specifically for the media, and that media can share those alerts on their broadcasts. But KTOO doesn't appear to be on an email list. Troopers couldn't confirm if we were on it. And in an email, Trooper Public Information Officer Austin McDaniel says they don't have a media list at all. He says it's local law enforcement's job to keep local media informed. Nelson is frustrated with the system. He wants Silver Alerts to reach more people, and he thinks they should be automatic, not something you voluntarily sign up for.
Not everyone is checking their email throughout the entire day looking for these alerts, the text message, you know. So it dings and you look at your phone and it's instantaneous rather than, you know, opening your email a day later like, oh, this person went missing last night. I didn't know.
This has become something of a personal crusade for him. Just last month, Nelson said he was in the Fred Meyer's parking lot looking at his phone when he saw Juneau police post a picture of Karen Harris on Facebook, asking Juneau residents to keep an eye out for her. He shared the post to Juneau Community Collective and immediately left to search for her.
She was about 5 years younger than my grandma was, so the community of Juneau came out for me, and so I decided to help with this situation.
He was able to find her safe within a couple hours. But afterwards, he had the same questions. What if he hadn't been on Facebook? What if he had missed that post from Juneau Police? His next step is contacting his state representatives to change the Silver Alert system. He doesn't want what happened with his grandmother to happen to anyone else. To sign up for Silver Alerts, you can visit silveralert.alaska.gov. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolini.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. A Friday the 13th, look at maritime superstitions after this.
Grundon's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute provides digital and print marketing materials to the Alaska seafood industry. Find thousands of stunning photos, video footage, and sales tools at alaskaseafood.org.
A life of danger and uncertainty has seafarers observing a strict set of rules steeped in myth and superstition. Many seagoing beliefs are based on the Bible. For example, Friday is the worst day to set out to sea. Most sources credit that to the belief that Christ was crucified on a Friday. Similarly, Sunday is the best day to begin a voyage because Christ's resurrection on that day is seen as a good omen. Thus the old adage, Sunday sail, never fail. A belief for centuries was that women had no place at sea, they weren't strong enough, and would distract men from their duties, thereby angering the seas and dooming a ship. Lore has it, however, that a naked woman would calm the seas. That's why many vessels have a bare-breasted figurehead of a woman on the bow. For hundreds of years, bananas have been regarded as bad luck. Reasons stem from causing ships to disappear to spider bites. Pouring wine on the deck will bring good luck on a long voyage. It's a libation to the gods. Dolphins swimming with a ship are a good omen, while sharks following is a sign of inevitable death. Black cats are considered lucky, not so flowers, which could be used for a funeral wreath. It's unlucky to kill an albatross or a gull at sea, as they host the souls of dead sailors, and whistling on the bridge will whistle up a storm. Cutting your nails or hair at sea is a no-no. Don't ever step onto a boat with your left foot or stir a pot or coil a line counterclockwise. Finally, marine myth has it that sailors pierced their ears to improve their eyesight. A gold earring was both a charm against drowning and the price paid to Davy Jones to enter the next world if a sailor died at sea. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods, serving Alaska's fishing communities since 1910. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 33, date issued 10 a.m. on August 13th. There will be a 24-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 9 p.m. Friday, August 13th, until 9 p.m. Saturday, August 14th, in the following areas. In the Raspberry Strait, northwest of Fognac, Paranosa Bay, northeast of Fognac, Duck Bay, and southeast of Fognac sections of the Fognac District. The northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The inner and outer Ugak Bay section of the east side Kodiak District, and the mainland district, except for the inner Kukak Bay section, remains closed. Closed waters are reduced from noon Saturday, August 14th, until further notice at Humpy Cove, to the stream terminus of Humpy Creek, stream number 257701, and to the stream terminus of stream number 257703. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Friday, August 13th, to 9 p.m. Sunday, August 15th, in the outer Katoy Bay section of the Afognak District. The Izua Bay section of the Afognak District, south of the line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape, will open to commercial salmon fishing from noon Friday, August 13th, and remain open until further notice. The current commercial salmon fishing period in the Izua Bay section of the Afognak District, north of the line from Haystack Rock to Pillar Cape, will be extended and remain open until further notice. The following areas are currently scheduled to close at 9 p.m. Sunday, August 15th. The Northwest Kodiak District, the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, the Outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alitak, Humpy Deadman, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Sikkelitik, Two-Headed, and Seven River sections of the East Side Kodiak District. Spearin Bay Special Harvest Area remains open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. And cost recovery fisheries have begun in Katoy Bay Special Harvest Area. And fishing opportunities in the Duck Bay, Izua Bay, and inner and outer Katoy Bay sections will depend on the ability to meet KRAA cost recovery needs. And all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Until further notice, in that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Well, thank you for being here for your Island Messenger for Friday the 13th. Be careful out there.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the August 13th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. It's happening, the subtle color shift to fall. Our abundant greens are taking on a slightly different hue. There's a hint of yellow starting to show up. Pushke is yellowing. Grasses along the highway are yellowing. It doesn't happen overnight, but look around. It's starting to happen. Other changes are around, too. Fireweed flowers are showing up more, although not in the numbers I expected based on the number of plants we can see around. They just don't seem to be going to flower yet. Maybe that's a good sign of delayed winter. Who knows? Even without the telltale fields of magenta fireweed flowers, you can tell we're getting closer to summer's end. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. The changes in season mean changes in fish. We'll gradually start seeing fewer pink salmon and more coho in some of the rivers. In the meantime, sockeye are still running strong at Sultry and respectably well at Passagjack. Coho fishing at the Buskin and other rivers out the road is just around the corner. In fact, a few have already snuck through the weir at the Buskin. August is definitely a time to be bear aware along the rivers and trails. They're still fairly lean and are looking to fatten up for winter, so in theory, they'll be focused more on fish and not on you. Just pay attention to your surroundings and make sure to make some noise to let them know where you are on the trails. Saturday night is the 25th anniversary of Warm August Night at the fairgrounds, a fundraiser for the food bank. In fact, the price of entry is either $20 or 5 cans of food and $10. Gates open at 6 for the car show and music starts a little closer to 7 p.m. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.